Blog Talk Radio.
You had some motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's badass thugging like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, John? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. You better not touch that sound. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the Queen of Trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chili Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West, y'all.
All right, we live and direct for exclusive interviews at Off the Cuff Radio. This is episode 580. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin. And this show is sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cock Picker, Schoolboy Radio. I got my whole T-Max with the facts on the line. What's good?
What it do, y'all. Another Super Sunday on that Fresh Oak TC Frequency Off the Cuff Radio. Shout out to our co-host, Spiro, get a lot of Sandman, Lady Chinchilla, of course, DJ Sincere, Dirty Basement Radio up in New York City. We are ready to kick it off. And first off, we got to say shout out to Shalon Douglas for helping us put this together with our tremendously talented thespian guest of all things magnificent in cinema. This man is director, producer, actor, so many other superlatives that constitute black excellence in film. And after a little bit, we finally were able to get him on, and we're going to speak about everything he's been doing in his thespian endeavors and what he's got going on, what he has been doing, what he's got going on right now. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Omar Cook. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing, man? Thank y'all for having me on, man. You know, I appreciate the introduction, too, you know. I got my boy Adonis Armstrong on here, too, you know what I'm saying? My co-director, co-writer, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, we adore.
Yeah,
he's
on the line
now. Okay, we got him on now. We got both of y'all. Okay,
yes,
okay.
Yes, sir. What's happening?
OC a double A, man. Look, it's great to have y'all with us, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Appreciate y'all having us.
Man, look. I guess we're gonna dive right into it like a deep six getting it. Tell us folks about you. Tell everybody about yourselves, and how you got started in the industry and how y'all met each other. Let's get it.
Me and Adonis, you know, we go back a little bit, you know what I'm saying? You know, we met each other in college. We both played football, college football. So I can remember being on a visit, you know, in the summertime. And he was sitting right next to me as freshman talking to the coach, you know what I'm saying? And the coach was talking about bringing us in to play. We both played defensive back, you know. We kind of just clicked up right there. You know, we had a class together in freshman year and whatnot, and you know, so, you know, we ended up playing against each other professionally in indoor football league. You know, he played in South Dakota, I played in Montana. And then we ended up actually both moving out to California to do acting. And we just met up on set one day. Like, oh, shoot, you acting, bro? Yeah, I'm acting. You know what I'm saying? We clicked up like that. And next thing you know, we ended up moving in together, and then, you know, naturally, we just started making films, you know what I'm saying, like, together, you know, and getting our homies together, and, you know, it's kind of really blown up since then, you know what I'm saying, like, it's a, you know, it's a true brotherly relationship, you know what I'm saying, and, you know, it's been a dope process.
Yeah, yeah, he's like a brother from another mother. You know, we met at SU, Southern University, HBCU, Go Jazz.
Go Jazz.
Yeah,
Go Jazz.
We met there, and we've been locked in ever since. Like he said, we was coaching, playing against each other, and we tapped in I think 2019 on a short film called Hood Boys and chopped it up. And the next year after COVID, 2021, we moved in together and we just said, you know what, let's create magic, forget the industry, let's try to do our own, and we keep doing that, and we here now.
Absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
For both of you, in terms of making that jump from being in college sports, of course, being on Southern, we got to love our HBCUs. Shout out to all the HBCUs. We got to shout out mine, North Creative Force, the whole the green and gold. I mean, of course, y'all represent Southern King, you know what I'm saying? He down in North Carolina. He got Winston-Salem State. You know, man, look. But who else y'all got down there, King, in terms of HBCUs? You got North Carolina Central. You got Livingstone. You got, Shaw University. You know, so it's like, yeah, man. When you all look at it from where you were in college athletics, because we want to go back to the genesis of it, what was it like in terms of the discipline you both learned playing college ball that would translate into the careers and the profession that you have now?
Man, I would say playing college ball at a Division I level, it prepares you for anything in life. You know, the perseverance that you gain from that and the mental toughness that you also learn through playing a sport, you know, with some of the best athletes in the country, and the discipline you learn from going through the day-to-days, the morning, getting up at 5 a.m. to finishing the day at 9 p.m. with a whole structure and schedule, and everything got to be on point, you know what I'm saying, and the crafting of your technique and getting better, you know, every single day, the competition, right? You know, that all translates to what we do today, you know what I'm saying? Like, we both play defensive back, so you know, we both naturally got that mentality to, hey, I can make a play, I can shut some shit, some something down, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, it takes a different person to play defensive back at D1 levels, you know what I'm saying? And we both did that. So I feel like what we do today, we operate with a winner's mindset. Like, all right, whatever it is we want to do, we're just going to do it, you know what I'm saying? And it's just a matter of figuring out how to do it and doing it. And accomplishing it is a championship for us. And we used to win trophies. So, sure, you know, we just continue to operate with the mindset of winning the trophy. So it could be making a film, right? Making a film for us and finishing it is winning the championship for us. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we both come from winning backgrounds, and that still translates today.
And just to piggyback off of that,
with you guys playing football, is it more so a physical game or more so a mental game?
I would say it's both, but it's more mental because you always have to prepare for the opponent. Because even if you prepare for the opponent can always do something else. So you always have to master your craft and believe in yourself so that you can achieve anything that your opponent do that you can react. Because in a football game, you're going to face adversity. And when you face adversity, how are you going to get up? Are you going to get up? You're going to get hit in the mouth, but how are you going to stand back up and play the next down and win the game?
Absolutely. And when you think about it from that perspective, man, you know, it's all about, like you said, the mental toughness. It's all about the training, the endurance, and memorization of plays in terms of knowing your script, because it translated to movies as well, but of course knowing the scripts in terms of knowing, you have to be able to read, react, improvise, and everything in between. What inspired you both in terms of growing up, in terms of where you knew acting and directing was something that eventually you wanted to do? Who are both of you, some of your influences and some of your favorite movies growing up?
You know, me, I'm from Cali, so naturally some of my influences are John Singleton. You know, that's one of my favorite directors. And Spike Lee, I really like him as a director too. You know, so I naturally call myself a mix between Spike Singleton, you know what I'm saying? You know, that's what I emulate. And, you know, I like the 90s feel of the black movies that we had. You know, they just made you feel a different way than, you know, movies that we have today, you know. So we really attack that, our movies, that type of way, to we want to bring that 90s black feel into the movie, you feel me? Where it's something that you can really enjoy, you know what I'm saying? And, yeah, you know, those are my two favorites right there.
I would have to say F. Gary Gray and Mario Peebles. So, like, I try to blend myself, so I call myself Gary Peebles. But we come together as the Hughes brothers. I'm originally from Mississippi, but I always, you know, love, you know, Set It Off, New Jack City. We love the 90s ambience, the essence of the 90s, because it was true storytelling through the art. So we just try to, you know, master our craft in those ways to put it on the screen so people can feel what we put on the camera.
Yeah, man. And when you look at the film tradition, of course, when you look at also guys like Robert Townsend, you know, Keenan Ivory Wayans, you know, the whole Wayans family, Bill mm-hmm. Duke, oh, my goodness. Now even the newcomers, like, you know, Eddie Murphy.
Yep.
I mean, you know, then you got, you know, some of the newcomers like Ava DuVernay, you know what I'm saying? Shucks, I mean, there's so many. I mean, of course, you can't forget Rashidi Harper. You know, shout out Rashidi, man.
Legends.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, the Hughes brothers, you know, Alan and Albert, you know, who gave us Menace to Society. Yeah. When you all look at the cinema today that depicts the African-American experience, what you both so emphatically and passionately stated about where it was. And we're all older, so we
right.
understand the significance of what it was to the years of 1985 to we'll go with around maybe even 2005, that 20-year period. When we look at
right.
and saw all of the, I mean, we're looking at the movies, we're looking at who came along. We're seeing the beginnings of Blair Washington, Blair Underwood, Denzel Washington, Kim Fields, Martin Lawrence, you know, shucks, man, Ice Cube, Ice-T, Queen Latifah, LL Cool J, you know, Cuba Gooding Jr., Lila Rashawn, the list goes on and on. Tisha Campbell, you know, Dawn Lewis,
yeah.
you know, Jasmine Guy. I mean, the list is endless. And
right.
yep.
you people have to understand. I mean, we can't forget Debbie Allen, you know, and what she
right.
did. You know, I mean,
yeah.
you know, when she came in to save a different world, for those that don't know that story, check out the internet and watch that documentary about it, The Unsung, about how she saved that show when it was
yeah.
kind of sinking. And once
yeah.
again, takes it back to the HBCU because they really, really, really got it. They nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That time was so
that's
special,
insane.
Y'all. Yeah, it was so special because you saw the emergence of black talent. We saw a situation where even in the 70s, it was starting, of course, Sidney Poitier, rest in peace, you know, Eartha Kitt, rest
sure.
in peace, you know, Ruby Dee, Ossie Davis, so many others. And they laid that foundation for us. And to see I'm speechless. Because we were spoiled. We were spoiled. I mean,
right.
What did it mean when black cinema to you both was finally accepted as a legitimate medium? Did actually it was profitable? Did it was actually something that would resonate with an audience that to a degree had kind of not been acknowledged?
Well, like you said, you know, you guys grew up in the era of all of those great legends, you know, from even, you know, the late 70s to, you know, like you said, the early 2000s, you know. So black cinema has been on the rise since then. You know, we grew up in the social media age, where we've seen the evolution of the internet and, you know, just social media and in general and entertainment evolving to another level. So, you know, just being able to kind of be born in the 90s, you know what I'm saying, as a kid, you know, and then being able to see, you know, the not only the growth of technology, but just entertainment as well. It's exciting, you know what I'm saying? And we understand the responsibility that comes with this now, you know what I'm saying? These movies, they reach millions of people. They have the opportunity to influence people and impact people, you know what I'm saying, in a major way. And there's more opportunities than ever for black entertainers, black filmmakers, black creators to get their work seen and get out, you know, and we are here to basically take advantage of that. And, you know, like, it's like you look at people like the, like groups like the Black Panthers, where they had the newspaper that they were having to get out their news to, right? You know, today we have media, right, where we can use movies to do the same thing and reach people in a major way. You know, they wish they had the type of reach that we have today, you know what I'm saying? So this is a major opportunity for a lot of black creators out there to get some real messages out there. And, you know, it's exciting to be going through this period of time and actually executing through it.
I would say black cinema always been there. It was just Shadowland. When you look at black cinema, other cultures always try to imitate black culture until it's time to be black culture. I think in the 90s, it just took the world by storm when you had Boys in the Hood, New Jack City, Set It Off, Menace to Society, that actually, you know, put black trauma on the screen in a grateful way. But it also had messages for the black people. Even the Wayans brothers, it was comedy, but it was always messages within the comedy for black people to listen to. So we want to do the same thing, you know, carry the torch and informing our people that it's more opportunities out there to do, and just whatever you dream about, just go do it.
You know, And it's so inspiring, because we can't forget also the other trailblazers, of course, like Oscar Michu and, of course, Tim Reed, you know, from Chesapeake, Virginia, my hometown. You know, I mean, Tyler Perry, a lot of people think that he was the first man to, you know, own his own movie studio, but that was actually, I believe, Tim Reed was the first to do it. Even before then, Oscar Michu, I think he was before Tim Reed. So it's like a lot of lineage.
Yes.
What you both said about that 90s cinema and those movies there, it is always important, just like we talk on this show about music and the hip-hop culture, that we keep it in our hands, that we tell our stories from our perspective in an authentic fashion. When you both got to Hollywood, what did you find in the opportunities and openings for black actors? Because you heard the joke. For all actors in Hollywood, right. You know, 20%, you know, 80% of the actors don't work. So it's all hard, but because everybody is trying to come in to get it. So it's so many.
Right.
What did you both find coming in about trying to find your space? And what do aspiring thespians of all colors and nationalities have to understand about what it takes to get your foot in the door and be able to, you know, make an impression?
Yeah, working in Hollywood, it's a tough place, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I would,
mm-hmm.
It's just like any other place, but it's really a tough place, you know what I'm saying? There's so many people that want to be stars, and they have this great vision, right, of obviously conquering, winning in Hollywood and booking roles, and it's not an easy thing to do. There's so much competition, right? And there's only so many roles, you know, that's on the studios, you know, the major studios, right, major films, you know, the chances of people actually becoming Angela Bassett and Denzel Washington is slim to very, very none, you know, in reality. So, you know, I'm a person, and I know Adonis is too, you know, a person of full confidence, and you know, I believe in myself truly. So, I mean, once I jumped into the industry, my mind had already went to the, oh, I could do this, I could do that, I could do exactly what they're doing. And I know that about me, you know what I'm saying? So it more so was just, I started off in the background, you know what I'm saying? I did my background on TV shows for a bit, some stunts to work, and eventually I just kind of observed how things were being made, how the actors acted, how the directors directed, how everybody moved on set, you know, and then I just, you know, internalized that and just learned while I was there. It was like being on internship, you know, and once I'm able to internalize something, I'm able to present it to reality for myself, you know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of going to get it, doing the auditions, taking the classes, you know, spending the time studying the movies and really starting to book roles and book smaller roles and smaller gigs to climb your way to the top, and then eventually deciding for yourself that you can do it for yourself. We're in a time where black creators have more opportunities than ever to do for themselves. You know, there's platforms like Tubi. There's platforms now where you can self-distribute your own movies. You know, it's just a matter of creating. You know, iPhones, these are high-powered machines now, so you can literally shoot your own movie. We shot our own short films, our first short films off of the iPhone, and won 30 awards at international festivals off the phone, you know, before we ever touched a real studio camera for our movies.
Tell us about
that. That's motivation right there. That's motivation right there, man. But it's showing you that people don't need $1 million equipment. As long as you got the brain and as long as you have the vision, they're going to come to life.
Yeah. If you have the vision, you're halfway there because you still got to do it. I know it sounds cliche, but you really have to get up and do it for yourself if you want something to happen. Like, example, LeBron James isn't considered one of the greatest players on earth right now because he just was chilling, drinking water all day. He's in the gym working on his craft. As an actor, you're going to hear a lot of no's, but it has to motivate yourself to saying, I can do that. Even if they say the no, I know the yes is coming because I'm putting the work in, and which came to us shooting our short films. Well, we was just chilling in the house one day talking because we both got a audition for Snowfall. Both of us got an audition for Snowfall, different characters. So it was a possibility for both of us to be in the same episode of Snowfall, and that would have been incredible. But we did the self-tapes. We didn't get it. And then I think about 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, we were just sitting in the front room and we were just game planning on how ways to get on Snowfall, ways to get on Power. And in the process, you know, I got the iPhones. Let's shoot it ourselves. Let's shoot some content ourselves and show people that we can really do this. It's not really about showing people. It's like, it's a confidence saying, I can do this. It's not saying, I think I can do this. So we put in the work. Some of our close friends that's in the acting realm as well, picked them up, and we are Scandalous, Deadly Thoughts, Coke Boys. We won, like you said, 30 awards. I mean, it's inspiring because when I think about it, it's when I first moved out here, I had no idea of Hollywood. I'm from Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi. And, you know, and down there, you either play football, sell drugs, or you just doing something else. So I made a decision after seeing Black Panther. I saw the black excellence on the camera, on the screen. And I said, I want to be able to do that. And now I'm achieving that with my partner, brother from another, Omar. It's just greatness, you know, it's just greatness, walking in our greatness.
Yes, sir.
Man, I mean, and what y'all do in terms of how you both always kept the optimism, always kept the pragmaticism, and kept the perseverance. You said Jackson, Mississippi. Can't go without shouting out my people, Snoop 11, and of course, Boo Rossini. You know, shout out to them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of course, Trio Jackson, you know, the establishment out there, man. You know, so many of the folks down there, man. When you see how, like the audition for Snowfall, shout out to the late great John Singleton for laying the groundwork for it. So tragic that he was gone before we saw the whole thing, before he saw it all through. What is a typical audition like in terms of how you go in and read for roles, how you get casted? Because there's so much, too. I mean, we haven't even gotten into how you get management to represent you. I mean, so there's a lot to this. I mean, just run with it like Barry Sanders through the hole and tell us.
Yeah, man. The audition process is tough, man. It's first of all, it's tough to get roles. It's tough to get the auditions like that, you know. You really have to start off with, like, the smaller auditions for, like, short films or student films or non-paid films. Like, you got to do those auditions and kind of dominate those first before you even get management, you know. The people that get, like, the studio roles, like, or studio auditions, like, to get Snowfall, you got to have an agent, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to have an agent that gets the role, that gets the auditions to send it to you, you know what I'm saying? So, we both obviously got agents and whatnot. So we got the auditions for it, you know, and they send you the audition, right? And, you know, there's a certain role, and, you know, we have to take the piece of the scene that they give us and become that character, you know what I'm saying, and put it on tape. You know, it's a process, you know, and it's a process of perseverance, because you really don't know if you're going to get the role or not, you know what I'm saying? 9 times out of 10, you're not getting it. So, but you still got to do it, because the one that you don't do is the one that you book, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
You know, it's a process of keeping your head in a positive space and seeing that you can do it and understanding that one of these is going to pop. It's just a matter of continuously doing it every day, day in, day out. You know what I'm saying? And really getting better at your craft so that you can book the auditions. You know what I mean?
Since, you know, both of us play DB, I treat, like, when I get a script for an audition, I treat it as, like, you know, as a DB, you're going to get caught on. Like, somebody's going to catch a pass. I take that as a no. You have to wash yourself off and go out there and think about making the play. Because like he said, the audition you don't do, that could have been the one that you booked. Like, it goes back to the yeses and nos. You can't be afraid of a no, because a yes is right there. It's either a yes or a no. It's millions of people that don't get auditions, but it's probably a few hundred who do, and you are part of that hundred. So you have to teach, you have to think about that. Like, they chose me amongst a group of 100, because millions of people trying to get on Snowfall, and they want to see me on camera read for their role. So you got to attack the role if you get it or not. That's how the game is.
I mean, it's like press coverage when you're in the zone too, or you're out there on the island by yourself, you know, on a single. So you're basically looking for that pass to come over. And when you get it, because you're covering your man coming off, whether he's running a cross or an out route, and from there, you know, you just cover. And then you got to intercept that role from somebody else in terms of how you nail the audition, because if someone's trying to catch it, you got to intercept that and be like, yo, I'm the one that's running this stack for the TV, because I'm the best one. I'm the all-star for this, you know. In terms of what you found in terms of the direction you all wanted to go when you all went to filming, did you all have a specific type of plot in mind, or was it just something you went with the flow just to kind of get everybody an idea of what your talents were?
Well, I mean, our first film, we started off with a film called Scandalous, and we started wanting that we could do, like, that was easy to do with our friends. So, I mean, everybody goes through relationship dramas and whatnot, so that's something that we knew would be relatable, you know what I'm saying? And we made a film, you know, surrounding, you know, some relationship issues, you know. And our first few films, couple films, That and Deadly Thoughts, both tackled relationship issues and dramas. And from there, we wanted to, like, you know, we talked about, you know, Snowfall. You know, Snowfall's one of my favorite shows, and Adonis is too, and we wanted to be on the show. So we thought to create a short film that kind of emulated that type of genre, the crime drama genre. And we called the film Coke Boys. You know what I'm saying? We're, you know, we basically were big-time dealers like he was on Snowfall. You know what I'm saying? We basically played that character so we could show ourselves in that type of role. And the film kind of took off a little bit. You know, it racked up over 100,000 views on YouTube. And, you know, we kind of emulated some of the scenes from, like, Menace to Society, Boys in the Hood, and put it into a short film. And it really got a lot of traction for us. And from there, we just knew that we needed to expand on that. And so our first movie, Ellie Undercover, was a crime drama genre, because that's hot right now, you feel me? And we really wanted to do something that was entertaining. We planned to do genres in, like, all genres, like sci-fi, you know, horror, fantasy, like, you know, we're going to tackle a lot of different things here. But, you know, just, it's kind of film by film basis for us, you know what I'm saying? Like, just what we want to say in the moment. And we try to use entertaining situations to tell real stories. Movies that you can feel is our motto, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm excited to see what's to come.
Who are some of the Hollywood celebrities that reached out to you both once you really started gaining traction?
It's kind of crazy, man, like talking to different people. Like, you know, we talked to the dude who played Arnaz on 101 was a couple weeks ago, Richard.
Yeah.
And, who else? I've talked with Jay Fonz. We plays on P-Valley right now on Stars. We've talked about some other things. You know, Spencer Moore from All American, who plays on there, and the Wonder Years. Just was in Creed 3 as well. You know, it's been pretty cool. We also just spoke with, I think it was Erica Hubbard from, Lincoln Heights? She was a star of Lincoln Heights, you know what I'm saying? And she came on and spoke with us. So I mean, it's been a few people, man. You know, I know our name's gonna get a little bit bigger, and so we're gonna start attracting a lot of different people. You know what I'm saying? It's exciting. It's exciting to network upwards.
Yeah, man. Doing this show, we've been so blessed to, you know what I'm saying, talk to actors and actresses, you know, costume designers, outfitters. Shout out to Kenya Ware, of course, one of our biggest supporters. We love her so much. You know, the late, great Louis Rankin, of course, you know him as Ox from Belly. You know, we got to interview him. You know, Jermaine Hopkins from Juice. You know, Tyrone Burton, who played TK in The Parenthood. You know, shout out to Robert Townsend for that. You know, I mean, you all are carrying on tradition in such a distinguished, profound, and proud fashion that really, really uplifts, you know, the Black community, and more importantly, shows the versatility, the talent, and the strength that is Black male in film. From where you all came up watching the movies, from where it was, how do you feel about the current state of affairs now in terms of what some would per se are not so much the lack of star power in Black cinema with leading men, but seemingly who's going to be next out there?
Well, you know, Hollywood today is an interesting place, man, you know, especially for American actors. We're seeing a big influx of English actors that are coming aboard, and they are booking a lot of roles in American roles. So
I y'all to speak on that. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, so it's the competition is different now. You know what I'm saying? We're not just battling at home, right? We're battling across the sea. So, you know, it's forcing people to, one, not only step their game up acting-wise, but to pick up other talents. Like, you can't just be an actor and be successful in Hollywood anymore. You got to have multiple talents. You know, it's people that model, it's people that sing, it's people that You know, they have other, like, you know, they produce, they direct, right? So, you know, we have to be a jack of multiple trades here, me and Adonis, which sets us apart. And I think the days of just an actor being an actor, like Denzel just being Denzel or Halle being Halle, right? I really think those days are coming to an end. And if you want to really be successful, I feel like the next level stars are going to have to be multi-creative here. You know what I'm saying? They're going to have multiple multiple endeavors here. Like you also are seeing a lot of music stars, you know, being multi-talented, like Chloe Bailey. You're seeing her do Chloe and Halle. They both do Halle just started as Little Mermaid, and they do music, right? So it's a cross. You have to be multi-talented here. You know what I'm saying? So, and I think specifically for Black people, we are very talented. So, the more you can do, the more you'll be able to do.
Yeah, you have to be able to do a lot of things in this industry. Because if you just want to act, you will always be waiting on a job. But if you, the more you know how to do, like you want to produce, write, edit, it expands your brand. So more. A lot of people can know you because it's all about who you know. Excuse me, it's all about who you know and what can you do besides the thing that you want to do. It's a lot of actors who just do the acting, but it's some who sing, like you said, some who rap. So it makes them more visible to others because then you can, I need a soundtrack from you too. So now you got a soundtrack and you in a film. So you have to be versatile. Versatile is the game.
And, you know, a lot of people really don't understand that from a perspective. You know, Ice-T, LL Cool J, you know, Ice Cube, they all show, you know, Queen Latifah, they showed us that early. You know, a lot of people forget right. that LL Cool J's film debut was in the movie Wildcats with Goldie Hawn in 1985. You know, I mean, we can't forget Will Smith, you know, for what he did in The Fresh Prince, you know. So yeah. There was already that multitude, that versatility that was already there that was going back years ago. So they were prescient in their talent that would translate later on in the future success when they showed that they could expand behind that. You know, like what both of you said now about how it's translating now, you know, you look at Damson Idris. You know, in Snowfall, I mean, and it was funny to watch him on the talk show on the Tonight Show. He was talking about how Dub C was giving him was his dialect coach and everything.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, yep. And of course Idris Elba. You know, when he was Springer in The Wire. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yep. You know, him, Wood Harris. You know, a young Michael B. Jordan before everybody knew who he was. I mean, you look at Method Man, you know, when he was in an episode of Martin way back when. I mean, this has a lot of legs in terms of the history when we moonwalk like Michael Jackson taking it back.
I see in New Jack City.
Yeah. I mean, Tupac and Juice. I mean, and that was crazy. Yeah. We can talk about it because it's a story everybody knows about how, you know, him and Tretch went to the reading. You know, you know, Tupac just happened to go with him, and you know, Tretch read for it, and they were like, "Well, you know, have your friend read too." And they didn't expect nothing, and they said by the time he read for Bishop, because you know they're all like just stone faced because they don't want to give it away before they like make their decision. And they said after Pac and Tretch left the door and shut it, they were like, "He's Bishop." There's no other way. He's Bishop.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite actors of all time. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to remember, 1991, before that, he was in a different world with Jada. You know what I mean? Because so, they knew each other going way back. So it's, oh, man, I mean, you look at Pac. I mean, I know we're going to turn this into a Pac 7, but it's all right because we love him. I remember back in late 1991 when I first heard about this movie called Juice, and it was coming out, and we heard about Tupac was going to be, we're like, because we'd already known Tupac for Tupacalypse Now. So we're like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do a movie? So we're like bugged out. And then like winter of 1992, Juice drops. And I mean, I mean, the hood movies just kept coming, and we loved it. You know, that was another entry in a long line of marvelous cinema.
Right.
What's going on right now with the strike in Hollywood? Of course, the writers have got their situation straight for the most part, but there's still an issue going on with the actors. The whole situation with the SAG Screen Actors Guild. You all are obviously in this game. What do people have to understand about the working men and women in Hollywood, what this is all about in terms of them trying to be fairly compensated, and how this game works in terms of making sure that when you get on set, when you're negotiating, that you do get fairly compensated for it?
Yeah, obviously Hollywood is in a different state right now. You know, the strike has been really about half a year now. So, you know, it's really a devastating blow to the entertainment industry, but it's something that needed to happen for the grand scheme of things. You know, what's going on now is that there's technology is evolving to a new level, right? So we have AI, and let's say you want to use, they want to use your name and your face and your likeness and voice for a Marvel movie. Well, they may want to use that today for three new movies with AI instead of just paying you for one. You know, they can artificial intelligence you and keep your image and your voice, and it's easier for them to pay out like that. You know, so that's what is one of the reasons for the strike for the actors, is being able to maintain our image and likeness, you know, despite the AI technology, being able to be paid for our true talents, right? And then obviously being fairly compensated with the streaming platform. Streaming has changed the game. You know, it used to be movies just go to theaters, right? And everybody goes to the theater to see the movie. Well, that's a lot of box office sales and tickets. Now movies go straight to streaming now. They go straight to Amazon, straight to Netflix, straight to HBO. You know, each streaming platform has its own contracts, and due to that, they're not seeing as many residuals as they used to get from getting it in the theaters or getting it in the on the cable, you know what I'm saying, TV networks like they used to, right? Or renting it from movies and DVDs and stuff like that. So it's much different now. So there has to be some new changes there, right? Through that all, you know, it's an unfortunate process that needs to happen, right, between the actors and writers and the higher-ups in Hollywood, which would be, you know, the streaming platform owners and whatnot, and major studios. So obviously the writers have finally settled, and the actors are now still trying to make sure that we get what's rightfully due here, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, you know, even with the strike, you know, me and Adonis have really been trying to stress this to, you know what I'm saying, to, you know, people that, you know, it's time more than ever to start being creative in your own right, like being able to create your own shit, being able to write your own stuff, being able to direct and self-produce and act, you know, and build your own teams here, build your own stuff, you know, because you don't want to be in positions like this where the major studios and unions, they control your creative talents and ability. This is half a year. A lot of people haven't worked, right? So it's like, what can you do for yourself when nobody else is giving you a job? So, you know,
that part.
It's one of those times where people can have to pick themselves up and really look at the situation for what it is at this current moment and say, what can I do right now to keep me rolling? You know what I'm saying? Shit, you know, even during the pandemic, we was all locked up in the house, but certain people got rich over the pandemic and certain people didn't. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of looking at the situation and just, hey, life happens, and, you know, I wish the best for everybody, you know what I'm saying, to get their rightful contracts. But, you know, we got to really be able to pick ourselves up during this time and start producing our own stuff to a high level.
Like you said, it just leveled the playing field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when the pandemic hit. I think this is the snowball effect of the pandemic, because that's when everything started shut down and everybody couldn't go out. Everybody had to be pretty much either remote home, or they had to get their entertainment in their house. So that's where the streaming platforms really started to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And one thing about it, y'all, what y'all said is so true, because you can't wait around for, because as we saw with the pandemic, shit literally changed overnight. So we saw where everything was moving along in such a regular fashion, and then it stopped. You know, everything got quiet. I know with us at Off the Cuff, you know, King and me were like, we ain't stopping shit. we still going full throttle.
Any day, it was good business.
Yeah, I mean, look. We was like, look, y'all home now. Y'all got to come on the show.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Full schedule is down.
You know, so I was like, but seriously, it really enabled us to really get a lot of dope interviews during that time. And as everything was lifted, we got outside again and got to meet a lot more people along the way. So things can happen. You know, like Dr. King said, if you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But you have to keep moving. You know, and that's important. When you all talk about how AI has this is one of the roots of this issue right now with the actors and the studios, this also translates into hip-hop as well, because we're seeing this in a situation where they're essentially trying to manufacture something that is not genuine. And we are artists, right, all in all the set. And if it don't come from the artist's mouth, it ain't genuine. But they're trying to cut costs and then maintain that ownership. It's just like in the music industry, what you all said about how this streaming stuff, there's still nothing like going to the theater, watching a movie, just like there's nothing like buying an album off the shelf with a physical and making sure that people get their money directly. You know, that's important. And I think with the technological aspects of it, we got lost in the perceived convenience of it, but not seeing the car crash that's behind it in terms of how these things ain't always the best way. Expediency is not always the best express lane, and I think people need to understand that. In terms of when this is all resolved, because it will get resolved with this whole strike, who would you all love to work with in terms of the type of movies you want to do, and maybe ideally having the a co-star, anybody that you would all want to have?
I mean, the list goes on. I would say me, I mean, some old school legends, you know, like Lorenz Tate, let's say Angela Bassett, you know, Courtney B. Vance, you know, Don Cheadle, you know, Will Smith, you know, those type of legends, to especially being able to direct them. It would be so dope, you know, and also it would help to how Denzel Washington helped Spike Lee. You know what I'm saying? He gave him game doing the movie, Mo' Better Blues. So it would be, you know, it would be very vital, you know, to be able to, you know, direct or even just work on a project with their names attached, because I know they would want to see us do our best, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely want to work with some 90s legends too, man. And also, you know, some young stars today. Like, I think it would be dope to get Michael B. Jordan in a movie, or get Kendrick Lamar. That's somebody that we really want to work with, Kendrick Lamar. Some other dope rap stars that's out here in L.A. Buddy, G. Perico.
Broadway,
you know,
shout out Broadway.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to get some of the hip hop stars that's around. Tiana Taylor, you know, she just starred in The White Man Can't Jump. It would be dope to get her in a movie. She's been acting and doing a bunch of movies too. Chloe Bailey. You know, those are some people I definitely want to work with. Who else? Dancing Idris is a good he's a good actor, you know. And also Coco Jones, who's also on the Bel Air show.
Oh, yeah.
There's some younger talent.
Gail Bean.
We want to get it. Gail Bean. Yep, she's a hater. You feel me? So, you know, we definitely want to tap into the young black market too. You know what I'm saying? As well as the older generation.
I mean, when we
look
at
missing too, Hey, I was going to tell you this too, man. What made those films all so special, and I miss this just for nostalgic purposes, is the soundtrack.
Yeah. Right. That was insane. Yeah, we had a dope soundtrack for Ellie on the cover, man. The soundtrack, we used all up-and-coming artists, you know what I'm saying, people that have that do some dope things, you know. It's a new artist on there, One Take Ocho, that had on. He's from Compton, you know what I'm saying, a Compton artist on there. We had another Los Angeles singer on there, Jamesa. She dropped some dope R&B songs on there. Mississippi artist on there, JD. And then we had a New York artist on there, Jay Sinatra. And then also
Queezy from Carolina.
Queezy from Las Vegas, and then William Prize from North Carolina. Yep. Yeah, so pretty much from everywhere, man. You know, we try to put on some dope artists on our movies.
Man, look, y'all did it just like Issa Rae do when she had her show Insecure, because there was a lot of artists that we found out about. Like, I found out about Cam in China. I found out about Steve Lacy. You know, for those of y'all have not heard him, go listen. They are phenomenal.
Right.
You know, you mentioned Las Vegas. Shout out to our man Yowda, you know, down with MMG. You know, Yowda has been doing this thing acting. You know, so it's like, it's just so refreshing. It's so inspiring to see a lot of us getting out there really promoting positive change and showing it, you know. So a lot of people will look at social media, they will think, Black people are just the craziest, most irresponsible in the world with some of the crazy antics. I'm like, no, it's not. That's not who we are. We are inventors. We are innovators. We are professionals. We are thespians. We are thoughtful. We are tenacious. And we are triumphant. You know, and so much more outside of that in terms of superlative in such a super fashion.
100%.
What was it like to reach out to those artists?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm on. My fault. I thought I lost my connection. But yeah, go ahead, T-Mac.
Now you good? Yeah, so what was it like in terms of getting those artists to get on the soundtracks for your films and whatnot? How did that go in terms of reaching out to them?
We have our own media platform called 247loudculture.com, which is a media entertainment site where we do interviews with music artists and stuff like that, and we got the news as well that we promote
every
day.
Okay, dope.
Go check that out. It's 247loudculture.com. You know what I'm saying? That's our. We're basically, you know, a positive BET type. You know what I'm saying? So we make our own movies and we do our own news. So, you know, every artist that's on the movie was somebody that interviewed with our platform. You know what I'm saying? So we just show love to the people that show love to us. You know what I'm saying? So it was nothing to reach out to them, and you know, they're our homies and stuff. So we just, you know, just hit them up. Hey, we doing a movie, bro. You know. And they want to get the exposure too, you know. So it was a matter of just putting it in their mind, you know what I'm saying? Oh, shout out to Elijah Turner too, Elijah T. He did the opening track and credit song on there. He went crazy on the soundtrack too. He's a Bay Area artist, you know what I'm saying? So it was dope to get him on there too.
I mean, it was just dope getting them all, because like Miss Ray say, you got to network across. And all of us are trying to, you know, do something great in this world. And we just wanted to reach out to them to help amplify L.A. Undercover, which the soundtrack did. Because after the premiere, and oh, the soundtrack, the music was on there. That was dope. Y'all killed it. You know, it was crazy. And it's crazy because, you know, Big JD from Jackson, Mississippi, you know, that's my little cousin. I mean, that was my favorite part of the movie. It wasn't even me writing it, directing it, producing it. You know, help doing it. It was, you know, I have family, you know, on the track. I mean, he's dope, because if he wasn't dope, he wouldn't have been on there. But, you know, it was just dope seeing and hearing his, you know, track on, you know, LA Undercover, as well as some others as well, you know, because all of us is, you know, trying to reach a high goal in life. So So we all trying to do this together.
So we got a, so in terms of LA on, like on the cover, how did that come about in terms of you all putting the plot together, and how did you all meet Shallan across the way too? Because we got to shout her out again. She was the initial link for us, all of this.
Absolutely. Yeah, shout out to Shallan, man. You know, it's much love over there,
dope,
man. Yeah, hell yeah. Me and Shallan, we, you know, I had did a background role for a dude named Manny Halley. He's a director in Hollywood, did some films, you know, Truth to the Game series, you know, 1, 2, 3, which is on Netflix and whatnot. I did a pilot show with him, and I followed some of the members of his entertainment group, which was Imani Group, Imani Media, whatnot, on social media, and she just happened to be one of the people that I followed through him. And we followed each other for, I don't know, maybe like a year or so. And you know, just, you know, with social media, you just start to see what people do and how they move, you know. And one day I just reached out to her about a project, and we started connecting like that, and built a relationship like that. So, you know, one thing turned to the next, and now we're all connected here, you know, through business, and we got some dope projects on the way coming soon, you know what I'm saying? We can't really talk about them, but it's more stuff coming, you know what I'm saying?
More to come.
Want y'all back on to talk about it.
Right.
But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, man. There are times in terms of there's always been considered that glass ceiling, especially for black actors and actresses in Hollywood, and even then some would say where there has not always been, in some situations, help from our own trying to get ahead. Have you all experienced that, or everything has pretty much been positive in terms of what you all have been moving so far doing?
I try not to focus on like negative type of energy.
Understood.
Me personally, I mean, Omar, the same. Great energy just gravitate to us because we try to, you know, have a positive energy about ourselves. Everybody is just attracted to the brand 24/7 Live Culture. And like you said, we write our own stuff, and different people approaches us to want to write on our site the positive information we put out to the masses. We're not like a negative type of people who want to bash people down other networks. We try to, you know, depict positive light in this negative world, because the world is low-key negative. But we try to, you know, shine a light on the positive aspects of life through everyone.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
What do people have to understand about the life of a working actor? Because everybody thinks to watch the movies. Once you get in the movie, you get that big check and you get rich. And we all know it is not like
that. It ain't like that at all.
Yeah. That's a fantasy, you know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, that can really be said about any kind of industry, right? You know, but I think even with acting specifically, everybody's so entranced by the fame and the glory that you get from it, or possibly can get, because everybody doesn't get famous, you know. So I think there's this obviously aura about Hollywood that says, hey, if you do something, you're going to be rich and famous, or people just assume that you're in a movie, you're rich, like you said. And that's not true, man. You know, it's really a grind process. You know, it's really a lot that goes into it. You know what I'm saying? Every project pays differently. And then obviously sometimes you got agents or managers, and then you got projects that don't give you residuals. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a process that you have to go through to get to those type of roles. You know what I'm saying? And to get to that stage, you know, it's not overnight. You know, it's a real grind here. We work side jobs, you know what I'm saying? Like, just to be able to make the dream happen, you know what I'm saying? Like, I worked years of security, you know what I'm saying, alongside acting. And, you know, Adonis does bartending, you know what I'm saying? So, like, even though we on the big screen, like, we still hustling every day, you know what I'm saying, to you know, make sure that we got everything paid, you know what I'm saying, make sure that we got enough coming, especially because, you know, like, strike could come, you know what I'm saying, where you ain't working. So you really got to have your foot in some areas here. And if you're not Angela Bassett or Will Smith and making that kind of money, then, you know, you got to have some, like I said, some other hustles.
Yeah.
Got to put the work in. Just have to put the work in.
Yeah, man. Shout out to my cousin Ilya. You know, she worked in Hollywood for some years, having her own production company before she closed shop and, you know, came back to Virginia. But she was successful working on movies like Major Payne and some others, you know. So, you know, to talk to her and to get an idea of what was going on, it's a lot, man. You know, people don't really understand that it is something that is a process, you know, in terms of really, you know, getting out there. You look at a lot of people that is, they don't really get known until, like, you look at Morgan Freeman, you know. He, you know, didn't really break through until later on in his career, you know, and he is one of the most legendary and stellar actors of our generation. He's a guy, for all of us, we want our story narrated by him.
Yes, bro. Yes.
Now, we also have to talk, too, about the perils in terms of when you get out there and you get caught up in some bad situations. We look at what happened with Jonathan Majors and how he got caught up in something. What do people have to understand about when you're in the Hollywood spotlight and when the limelight is focused on you and there is much scrutiny about your personal and public life?
You say even without the entertainment aspect, you have to watch how you move because everybody's watching your every move, even if you're not famous. But if you're rich and famous, it's more glorified. Like, especially with social media today, you got to think about it. In the 90s, it wasn't every day you were seeing Ice Cube, Tupac walking down Rodeo or Vegas. But now you can get on Instagram and just see what Taraji P. Henson is. You know Taraji, making good. You see what they doing. So you sort of invested into their life. I just say you just have to watch how you move because any wrong decision you make could cost you everything. Growing up, I've been like that forever because, you know, I wanted to play sports. You know, I was a football maniac. And whatever was going to hurt me from stop me from playing football, I did not want to do. You know, like I remember like doing some dangerous stuff like with friends. I was like, nah, let me stop, man. Let me step back because I'm still trying to go to the NFL. You know, so I always had in the back of my mind, don't do nothing stupid, you know, and dumb that will, you know, cost you your God-gift ability that you was put on this world to do, you know. And now, you know, I always had the entertainment bug in me, but, you know, football just took the forefront. But now, you know, it's all entertainment. I still got it, you know. If I need to get on the field, I can do it. But, you know, I still watch how I move in certain situations. I don't put myself around people who's doing a lot of negative things because that's what they say, birds of a feather flock together. So I try to flock with people on the right path as me.
Yeah. And that's something when we look at it, it's a lot because people get caught up in the fame and this is a universal law, like you said, whether regular life or whether you're a celebrity. We see celebrities especially fallible because there's a level of access and privilege that is not privy to the regular person. And we got to keep it real. Sometimes people let it go to their head and they think they're more than what they are and not understanding that there are real ramifications. You know, even if you make a little bit of money, even if you got something, you get in some shit, you talking about legal fees. I mean, God knows. I mean, do we really got time on this show to talk about how many actors and actresses that got caught up where they went to court for something or they ended up paying out of court settlements and not going to trial? I mean, the list is endless.
Yeah.
You know? And you got to be careful out there. Just because something is available don't mean you should do it. You know, and there's a lot of temptation. Yeah. Obviously, with both of you having that pedigree playing college sports and understanding what it meant to be a scholar athlete, there was a discipline, there was a drive, there was a determination, and most important, discipline and discernment about what not to do making bad decisions. And that is important. Yeah. That is very important.
Yeah, 1,000%. I think that set us up for where we are now to be able to handle what's here. You know, Hollywood definitely has a lot of temptations. I mean, you know, it's full of temptations, but, you know, so it's not for the mentally weak. You know, you got to be strong in your own morals and really, you know, just being cool with yourself, you know what I'm saying, and not overextending yourself and trying to be everywhere with everybody doing everything, you know what I'm saying? You know, you know, keeping your circle tight and keeping, you know, shit, you know, keeping it cool, you feel me? You know, just, yeah, I don't hang out with everybody, you feel me? I'll just say that.
And we're not going to put you on the spot in terms of naming names, but there are those situations, because we've heard about it time and again about certain people in those Hollywood circles, and they try to get you to do some questionable stuff to get a role. Has somebody came at y'all sideways about stuff like that? And how did you all deal with it when it happened?
Oh, man, you know, to think that it doesn't exist in Hollywood is a crazy thing. I mean, it does, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, I can't speak for Adonis's, you know, experiences, but, you know, there's been a few questionable experiences I've had, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've had a director call me on Zoom naked, you know what I'm saying? Like,
what?
FaceTime. Yeah,
we're
crazy,
hoping it was a
crazy
chick.
I mean, nah, it was a dude, bro, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a dude.
Whoa.
Like, you know, yeah, I hung up the call, and dude started texting me, like, crazy shit, like, you know what I'm saying? Like crazy shit, like shit that you would never say in somebody's face, right? You know, so, you know, that's crazy to me, like, to think that that type of shit really exists, but it do. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, if you're a mentally weak person, you're going to run into some shit like that, and it's going to phase you the wrong way. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's some shit that's just tip of the iceberg. I can only imagine what it's looking like on a $20 million scale where, you know what I'm saying, there's real money involved. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you gotta be cool with yourself and not hang out with other people that don't align with what you got going, you know what I'm saying? So me and AD, we on the same page, you know what I'm saying? We on that no bullshit type shit, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm not here just to do famous shit, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm here to really make an impact for my people and really make some dope movies and leave some generational wealth, you know what I'm saying? All that other stuff that people be on in Hollywood is crazy to me, you know what I'm saying? And I don't get down like that, you feel me? So
right.
I don't even put myself in that type of situation, you feel me?
Well, I ain't had that happen to me. You know what I'm saying? I ain't had that happen to me, but I did get offered a role, you know, trying to, you know, someone trying to hit on me, like I can make you a star. And I was just like, you know what, you know, I can't. You know, I don't rock like that. You know what I'm saying? It's
right.
It was a respectful way how I said the no. Like, no, I don't rock like that because everybody is them. But at the end of the day, I'm still me, and I'm not gonna do nothing that I'm not gonna do for any role or anything. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel I'm better than that. If I want to do it, I will find a way to do it myself. Then do it through that way. You know what I'm saying?
And that's the most important thing, to have your morals and integrity. We, you know, obviously on Off the Cuff, we talk about a lot of things. We are never here to out anybody on anything. That's why, you know, we always, you know, prefaced it like we're not expecting you to give up names. We wouldn't want y'all to do it. We like y'all. We want y'all to have a career.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? But we also want our audience to understand that, especially if the stakes are high in an industry like that, and we're not going to get on the conspiracy shit because, look, that shit been going on. You know, it goes on in the music industry. So everybody tries to talk about, well, I'm like, the casting couch been around as long as Hollywood. I'm like, look, that wild stuff been happening. I'm like, y'all need to stop with the false outrage. It's like, that stuff been happening.
Right.
You know, so I'm like, the thing is, you know, either you're going to roll with a situation or you're not going to roll with it. But the thing is, are you going to be okay with it? You know, whatever people do in their private lives, that is them. And that's okay. But the thing is, let's separate that from a professional perspective. I'm here to do a job, and I want the job because right. you think I'm qualified to do the job. You can turn me down for a role if you don't think I'm the one. But I'd rather you honestly turn me down than it be some fuckery behind it where I'm hired because I had to do some fuckery to get it. You know?
Yeah.
That's just what it is. And, I mean, we look at it in the music industry. We see how a lot of artists, you know, do they really understand where they're at in terms of their careers, in terms of maybe what they may put out there to get on. And the reality is it's you're presenting your art to the world, and that's what right. you want to do. We get that. But there's a certain type of decency and respect that you should have for yourself first and foremost in that presentation. You know, you don't want to be labeled a thot. Don't do thot shit in your music. You don't want to be looked at as a drug addicted nigga. Don't do drug addicted nigga shit in your music. You know, that's just right. what it is.
What I tell people all the time, the right people will find you with what you
exactly.
do. Because it is people out there that's just like you looking for your artistry. You know, it's a lot of people who haven't seen Boys in the Hood. It's a lot of people who haven't seen Insecure. But if you do your content the way you want to do, with your truthfulness, so people will gravitate to that. Because when you try to play with someone else, you always falling short.
Yeah. And that's important in terms of how you move with it. And maintaining authenticity in an industry that can be artificial is a Herculean task. You all have climbed Mount Olympus on Zeus strength. And while you're still climbing, you're still surmounting the obstacles that come your way. That's to be commended and respected, you know, and that's very admirable for how you both have handled it, for everything that comes your way. Because like you said, man, it's a lot that goes on out there that people don't really understand and see. And it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is to break through.
Mm-mm. Not.
Sure.
I mean, in terms of it, I mean, in reference to what's the daily feedback y'all normally get when you interact with your people coming in? What's it like in terms of how you go about interacting with people coming on your site, on IG and all that, in terms of just talking to them and looking for those young new talents and just people to interact with, to build with, in terms of, you know, pushing y'all movement forward?
Yeah, we get a lot of love, man. It's been a lot of positive feedback. I mean, with everything that we do, you know what I'm saying? 24/7 live culture. I mean, we get a lot of love on Twitter. I mean, we're reaching over 30 million people, 30 million impressions each month via social media. And so it's a large fan base here that we have across our accounts. And, you know, we obviously don't take that for granted. You know, it's the power that comes with that. So we try to push just positive black excellence, you know what I'm saying, through our content. Always, you know, I don't care about who dates who broke up with who, you know what I'm saying? That's something that we really don't focus on. We focus on, you know, the inspiration, what inspires people today, you know what I'm saying? So, and I think just having everything work together, the films, the articles, the interviews, you know what I'm saying? It just creates our own media empire here, and that's what we want to be able to continue to build on, you know what I'm saying? Being able to build our own with our own resources, our own TV network, our own news publications where we're telling the truth about our own stuff and not relying on CBS and NBC and Fox to tell us something, you know what I'm saying? We're the source, or you know, other negative sites. There's a lot of black media out there that's really negative, that's pushing out nonsense. So we are here to counteract that, you know, in a way.
And really, it can be done in-house, everything. Everything can be done together. And I think our fan base is latching on to that, and it's dope to see.
And that's important.
Shout-outs you want to give out, and you care to drop your social media handle?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking we're about to wrap it up because I know I got to get up out of here. But you have any shout-outs you want to give out and any social media handles you want to drop so people can find you?
Okay, yeah. First of all, you know, shout-out to everybody that's a fan, you know what I'm saying, the 24/7 Live Coach, anybody that reads the site, anybody that watches our movies, anybody that comments on our social media, man. You know, we rock with everybody that rocks with us. So, you know, I want to thank everybody for the love. And, you know, my boy AD, obviously, that's my partner in crime, you know what I'm saying. You know, without him, you know what I'm saying, we wouldn't be where we at. So, you know, shout-out to the team, you feel me? And everybody can find us at 24/7 Live Culture, you know what I'm saying, on mm-hmm. Instagram, on Twitter, 24/7LC, personal Instagram, OmarCook_OmarCook_, and you can find all our social medias that's tagged in our bio and everything like that. You know, go check out the site, 247liveculture.com, for all black news and entertainment, you know what I'm saying, it's the premier platform, so go tap in.
You know, absolutely. You can find me
on Instagram _ADONIS_ on Twitter it's __Adonis with 3 underscores. Like you said, just follow the brand 24/7 Live Culture on Instagram, 24/7LC on Twitter. And you know, just I appreciate everybody, fans who watch LA Undercover, Coke Boys, whoever just, you know, shared it to a friend, you know, a friend of a friend, you know. Just appreciate everything that you've done for the brand.
Man, and look, we at all stuff appreciate you both so much coming on.
Appreciate you for having
us. Sure. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. You know, you're welcome back anytime. You know, yeah, anything y'all got, just say, hey, bring it back. Look, tell some of your peoples, you know, in the industry, stop on by off the cuff, man. We're welcome with open arms.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Oh, definitely, man.
Open
yeah,
arms and
cool
a non-intimidating couch.
appreciate it.
So, yeah, we better be up out of here, man. We thank y'all once again for joining us. We're going to definitely keep in tab with you guys on the future moves that you're making. And hopefully line up things whenever you guys have another project lined up for part two.
Oh, yeah, yes, definitely part two.
Definitely coming.
Yeah, we got that coming for you.
Definitely, definitely.
You know
what I'm saying? Yeah, man, nope.
We
about to sign up out of here. Y'all be blessed.
Yep. Be blessed too, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you all again.
All right.
All right.